Is the mic working? I've got so many here, I don't know which one's the one. Okay. Well, welcome. Glad to have you here. Why don't we today, we've got this beautiful display of flags, why don't we say the pledge, shall we? All together. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Okay, well, quite a get-together, and we want to first, of course, appreciate President Nancy Williams and AIB. I guess Mary Ann's here to cover today. Thank them. Let's give them a hand for letting us use the facility. They tell me, it's been my life experience, that education is a life thing. Continuing education, consider AIB, because they're here and they're handy and they do a wonderful job. I appreciate you coming, and I understand that healthcare is a very personal thing. I see a lot of signs, and it's okay to have your signs, but you've got people sitting behind you. If you could hold them down just in respect for them, and then when it's over with, well, you still have your sign and so on, but respect the people behind you and so on. But anyway, it's very personal. It certainly is to me, my family, and I'm satisfied it is to each of you. And when we talk about possibilities of doing things different, human nature being what it is, you kind of worry about it a little bit. And sometimes that turns to anxiety and other things develop. And I appreciate that. Just a few days ago, a little over a week, I was up visiting with my doctor, Dr. Peterson, who I see from time to time. He's my family doctor. I received a telephone call from my son to tell me that my grandson, 20 years old, looks like a young Tarzan, was facing a possibility of emergency surgery in Kansas City, that he had, through a freak accident, had ruptured his pancreas. And he was doing some martial arts training and supervision in the gym. And a freak thing happened. His opponent, being supervised, pulled him over, brought a knee up, and it just happened to hit the right angle and all those things, and cut his pancreas. I've never heard of that. And I asked Dr. Peterson, I said, tell me how serious. He said, oh, very serious. And a new word, the Whipple process, that surgery has to take place, is extremely delicate and very, very hard to do. So he took me aside and got his charts out and showed me. And that was the day that we canceled our appointments and my wife and I took off to Kansas City. Fast forward. Josh is okay. He was in good health. His vitals were good. He was in extreme pain. He'd gone home after the workout and saw his wife and his sister, went to the store, got some food, came home, fixed some late food, and wow, it hit him. But his vitals were good, and so they thought they could wait and examine him further, and they did some kind of a scope look that afternoon. And my term, the conduit that carries the enzymes, was not cut. The pancreas was. And they thought maybe it could heal itself. And so that's what he's going through. He's out of intensive care, has been for 2 or 3 days. He's walking and so on. He'll be on IV, I'm told, for many weeks. But he's going to be okay. Now, knowing some of our young folks, I was worried, did he have insurance? And found out that his employment, that a few days just before this happened, he qualified for insurance. I don't need to tell you how relieved I felt about that. Now imagine how he felt, his young wife was expecting, and the family, and so on. So it's very, very personal. It is extremely personal. So I appreciate Felix's strong feelings. But it's natural. And I bet there were strong feelings with other momentous things that happened in our country. I think so. I can think of a couple, and you probably can too. So here we are in a situation, and one thing over the last several years is I have struggled with the Medicare reimbursement rate for our state compared to other states. We've been getting a short end of the stick for a long time, and our physicians, our hospital, have been doing a great job, but not getting credit for it. And we fight to recruit and so on. And basically, we get about half what they do, say, in Louisiana. Nothing against Louisiana or Miami or other places, but that's the truth. And I see some of you shaking your head. You know that to be true. Probably some of you didn't know that. Very unfair. We all pay the same. And it shouldn't be that way. And we've tried everything. I could spend the hour we've got explaining things we've tried to do. But here's an opportunity to do it in this health care reform. And it's almost... Now, giving full credit to Braley and Lobsack, I've worked very carefully with them on this. They understand it. And they're on the committees. One's on the one committee, one the other. I'm not. I'm on agriculture and transportation. I've been on that special intel, which my time ran out. But I've been very close to a lot of people. And we even put a group together called the Disparity States. Those of us that were in this predicament. And we've been working very, very hard together to try to get this fixed. We got language that came up. A gentleman from Wisconsin, and Mr. Braley, Mr. Lobsack, myself, some language that will, we think, take the right steps. We really, really hope so, and that language is there at the moment. We realize it's a draft bill. We don't have a bill, per se. We got the 3200 HR, but everybody knows about it, that since, what, July 14th. But we got to bring those three together, and then we'll see what we've got. But I come to the conclusion over these last several years that we need some kind of a public option. I also realize that it's got to be constructed very carefully. I realize that. And we've got to be very, very careful. We've got to see what it is as we get to that point. But we got too many people. I find it all the time that, last year, when one out of four in Iowa can't have health insurance, that would make you alarmed. But I've been facing this for a long time, talking to people. And people come up to me, my insurance went up again. And I had a meeting just a few days ago, and an insurance agent, not an insurance company, an insurance agent came up to me. And he said, what is it that folks don't understand? Every time I have one of my clients come in, if you will, the agent, I'm raising their insurance 15 to 20%. And he said, what point can we keep that going? And I said, I don't know. I know it's affecting our economy. I'm very concerned about the economy and what it's doing to our country. And you get to looking at it, and you find out that about 60% of the bankruptcies is tied to some kind of a health care problem. Well, this is serious. It's very, very serious, and I could go on and talk about a lot of those things, but I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you, and that's what I came here for, to spend an hour with you to do that. But it's a very serious thing, and I understand that the personal part of it. I can share other stories from others that I've heard from. But we need to do this. We need to do things different. We can't just go on. If we want to go broke, if we want to be without insurance, just keep on the course we're on. We can't do that. And we can't do that, and so I would trust that we won't do that. And so I am working very hard on it, as many others are. And we hope when the day is done that we can come up with something that makes sense, that will work, and will support itself, and do the job that American people want and, I think, deserve. So I presume I'm going to get some requests from people for pledges today, and if we get those, well, we'll deal with them as they come. But I do pledge to you, I'm going to continue to work on this as hard as I can to make sure it's fair, it's equitable, And it's available. That's important to us. And I don't see at the point how we can do it without some kind of a menu that offers the opportunity for a public option, so there's a competition, availability, and it's affordable. Okay. So I know we got a number of you got questions. Are there any questions in the audience? Oh, yes. Okay. Well, here's how we're going to try to work it. I couldn't keep track of you and be thinking about trying to give you an answer. I've got Katie somewhere in the audience here that's going to, she's my right-hand helper on healthcare issues. She'll be taking the notes, so we'll be sure and get notes, Katie, as best you can. And we've got some little cards we'll make out to hand out if some of you don't get your questions in, so we can do that. And I've chosen Alexis over here on the left. And Kathy, where are you? Over here on the right. They've got microphones, so I want to hear your question. I want the rest of the folks to hear it. So we'll start off with Alexis. And I'm going to let them choose because I spend all my time to keep track. Alexis, you got somebody? Put the mic a little closer, please. Thank you.
First, I want to say thank you very much for all of your hard work that you do for our family. I'm speaking on behalf of Jackie because she has a disease process that affects her body, and her speech can be affected very easily. She really wants to tell you about herself and how she came to be here today. Jackie has been diagnosed with a rare degenerative disease called hereditary spastic paraplegia, and it affects approximately 15,000 people in the United States. Her diagnosis should have been made when she was a child, but she endured until the age of 32. Disability was awarded through the court system, and after a two-year process, she finally got it. The normal 24-month waiting period was reduced to about 2 months, and she currently receives that. Jackie worked as a medical assistant, and her husband carried Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance to his work. They had a customary deductible and about a 20% copay, and this was the insurance plan that she had while she was being diagnosed. As is appropriate, the calls were made to pre-authorize the necessary blood work, and it was approved by phone. After the testing, the claim was denied, and that claim was in the amount of about $5,000 for the testing. It was approved by phone, and two phone calls and letters to the insurance commissioner were finally okay. Her husband's company then changed insurance to a policy that had a $5,000 deductible and a much higher copay, which pushed her to the point of applying for that disability. This change of insurance by her husband's company is one of the many things that happens to Iowans and Americans. This increased cost to the family is an example of our skyrocketing healthcare costs. How can we reform healthcare to stop this?
Well, one thing that is in this H.R. 3200, but it's still got a process to go through, is that a predetermined condition, or a condition that you've already got, will not stop you from getting health care. And also, if you've people that's got a different malady, so occasionally I run into people that say, you know, I got a chance, I've been doing real well, to go on to another company, but I'm afraid to because I lose my health care. That won't happen as the way this is drafted right now. So I think there's great hope. We're going to have more efficiencies. We're going to have more, it's going to be more up to the doctor to decide that with the patient, in my opinion. And I think this is a step forward, and I'll keep this story in mind. I'll share that with some of my friends. I've got others to go along with it. A beautiful thing happened to me just the other day in Washington. Met a person like you that had a malady of she couldn't express herself well, couldn't do this, that, and she trained like you can't believe. And she went back to school. And you have to kind of pay attention to talk to this beautiful young person, this young woman, but she now has a PhD. And we're going to find her a job or somehow or other. We're just going to have to do it because she has shown that she can do it won't succumb, and we're going to try to take care of the situations. But thank you for your comment. Kathy.
Up next, we have Brett from Des Moines. Brett, what's your question?
I'm Brett Newton.
And
I'm calling from Des Moines. First, I'd like to thank you for all you've done for America's veterans. You're one of our best friends. As a veteran myself, I've been had the privilege of using the Des Moines VA hospital, and I can tell you it's nothing short of excellent. It's all people there, all federal employees. The hospital itself is owned by the federal government, and so no one can ever tell me that the federal government can't provide good health care.
Well, thanks, Fred. Thank you for your service to our country and a whole bunch of others. But how many veterans in the crowd? Okay, thank you. So give them a hand. You know, Fred, not too long ago, one of my friends, constituents, said that we were talking about the possibility of public option and so on, and this lady said, you know, you're kind of the poster child. I said, what do you mean? I said, well, you've spent over 20 years in the military and all this federal service, which I hadn't intended to do. In my time, we used to have a thing called the draft. Some of you might smile. I got one of those letters that says, greetings from your friends and neighbors, you have been selected. Well, I went for 2 years, but I stayed for a little over 20, and I lived outside the country 9 years of my life. Two of our children were born in a military situation, and I could go on and on all kinds of stories. So I'm not afraid of it because it's worked for me too, Fred, so I appreciate it. Lexis, back to you, wherever you are.
Yes, sir. We've got a question from Tobin from Des Moines.
Yes, Congressman Bonfog. Why don't you support single-payer action in health care? 60 people die every day because they don't have health care. Health care should be a right in this country. My privilege.
Well, I do. I think if I understood you correctly, a little echo in here, and I've been around too many artillery pieces, so I've got a little hearing problem, but I want everybody to have health care. I want it to be affordable and available, and I think that's what this is all about. A lot of people have talked to me, you'll probably hear about today, well, federal employees, including you, at this, you know, got there. We're patterning this after that to try to have this. That's the idea. And we think it can be done, but it's taken a lot of work, which it should, because this is a big, big item. And again, it affects so many people in their personal lives, so we've got to do it as carefully as we can and get the job done. Thank you, Kathy.
Yes, sir. Next, we have Bill from Des Moines.
Bill, I know that Des Moines
has
what measures have you taken to
help
the Congress and Senate? We hire your politicians. Problems. We don't hire you to be polarizing in the nation. This healthcare thing is a big problem. We need it solved, and we can hire somebody else if you don't choose to solve it.
Well, I appreciate the need. In fact, there was a poll released, I think, just today. This Kaiser family, which is known for their nonpartisanship, I just read about it today. I haven't gotten into all the detail. I'll try to do that. But it kind of drives it home that well over half Americans say, we need to do what you just said. We need to move on this and need to do it now. However, it's fair to say there's a large number that are very worried. You know, then they, you know, there's enough stuff been passed around. It is worrisome, and we've talked about that. But anyway, I told you my recent personal story about it, so appreciate your comment. Alexis.
Rob, good morning.
Rob.
First, I have excellent health care. But one thing I thought that the Congress could do immediately was save the country $20 billion a year, as I understand. Is get rid of Medicare Advantage. In other words, rescind Medicare, not in the 2030. many subsidies and then they share it then, only they help these people. And it's costing everybody money. That would be the perfect way to save at least $20 billion a year.
$20 billion sounds like a lot of money for this old farmer, but nevertheless, it's a good point. One of the things that put Medicare in a stress is that the rate is at, but the costs of it just keep going up and up and up. And so it's going to require a lot of activity. We're trying to work out in this reform bill that we're working on so hard. But I appreciate your comment, and I'll remember that. Kathy.
Yes, sir.
My name is Larry Clayton, Des Moines, and registered Republican. I voted for you several times, basically because of your war record and also your service to the country, so I appreciate that. I guess I'm under the impression that statutory people in the United States are already paying our fair share for tax or for health care. We're also helping to take care of those who do not have health care. And I think it's important to understand that everyone in the United States access to health care. They don't have insurance. Well, you and I both know you can go to the nurse, go to the VA, county hospitals all over the country, state hospitals. The hospitals, a lot of people don't know, private and public, are not allowed to turn away people who need help. So
I think you made a true statement that somebody goes up here to the emergency room, they're going to get cared for. The physicians, they've taken an oath. Somebody shows up with a cut or broken or whatever, they're going to take them. And that does go on, but that doesn't mean it's not paid for. What I've found out is I keep digging into this, and the information comes forth, that probably those of you that have got insurance coverage, you're paying about 8% more for those that aren't. That's what they told me, yeah. And, thank you for doing that, but you know, if there's a better way we can get some equity and get more involved in this thing and do things better, then why wouldn't we want to look at that? So your point's well made. Thank you for the point. Here you are, Alexis.
We've got a question from Wayne from Greenville.
Wayne.
Yes, I would like to stand here. I'm speaking for myself, and I'm here by myself, so that's clear. I am not in favor of government-run health care. What has been termed public option is just another name for government-run health care. It has been proven that most of the fraud and waste and abuse has come from the public side. That means Medicare, Medicaid, and SCHIP. Now, I would like to know, number one, why in the world do we think that something as complicated as health care can be run by the government? Because I would like to know your top three government-run programs that come in on time, under budget, and deliver what they promise.
Well, Wayne, as I told you earlier, and I'll just not dwell on to repeat it, but I took my ailing wife and children more than a few times into Army hospitals, in one case a NATO hospital, and others. We had children born there and things that just go on in families, injuries and so on, and I thought we've done very well, and I have no complaints about it. But your point, you have a concern, I want to hear your concern. I appreciate you coming and sharing it, and we'll put that on the table and talk about it. So we'll spend all the time doing that. Kathy, wherever you are. Well, okay, well, wait a minute. Okay, now, I'm not going to give in to all these. I'll just be polite and I'll try to do the same. Veterans Administration, the military. Now, please, please, please. And I covered some of my kids' situation when I was in the NATO arena. Kathy.
Okay, I'm here on the foreground, and up next we have Rudy from Des Moines.
Put the mic up real close. Thank you.
I have a small quote I want to read real quick from President Obama's health advisor, Ezekiel Mann. When implemented, the complete life system produces a priority curve on which individuals aged between roughly 15 and 40 years get the most chance, whereas the youngest and the oldest people get chances that are attenuated. Now, basically that means people who are 15 to 40 get the best chance of medical care. Do
you think
the
president listens to
his advisors, and if so, how can you be sure that that is not one of the directions that
healthcare will go? Okay, I can hear you. A lot of effort's going on, and again, you know, there's a lot of detail to be worked out, but I'm very pleased that even here from one of my former that I served with in the Iowa Senate and Iowa Legislature, Senator Jack Hatch, who I think is in the audience. So, Jack, are you here today? Okay. And talking to a friend through my daughter out in Colorado, and I kind of kept up from the two of them a little bit of what they've done at the state level, and they've done some very, very good work, it appears to me. And as I understand it, Jack, you're part of several other legislators from across the country who are working to try to develop some of these pieces to make sure that they're workable and affordable and available and stay within the realm of what we can do. Well, thank you very much. So that's what we're going to try to do. We'll continue to work on that.
Good afternoon. My 90-year-old mother died on August 13th. She had had a DNR, do not resuscitate, directive on file since 1993. When she went into the hospital, the emergency room resuscitated her and put her on a ventilator. She went in with heart failure. My sister's arrival at the hospital a few hours later had to remove, had the ventilator removed. And my mother died about 10 hours later and was much more peaceful than she had been when she was on the ventilator. My point is that a DNR, do not resuscitate, isn't worth a word bottle fit if it's not adhered to, if it's not, it's a legal document and it wasn't adhered to in this case. What remains for us is to find out what the hospital will charge us for this very expensive error on our air front, and will charge Medicare for this. I consider this whole issue of DNRs a kind of a phony issue because if they're not going to be adhered to by the medical profession, we're fighting about something that is not real and so on. So I can end that to say what seniors need, what do I think seniors need? Well, they need hearing aids, they need glasses, and some cases they need teeth. And none of that's included and paid for by Medicare. All of these things would improve the quality of life, would improve my mother's quality of life. My husband and I are very satisfied and enthusiastic customers of public health. We happen to have Medicare, and we have TRICARE for life because my husband is a retired veteran. These things work. They work very well for us, except for the above mentioned hearing aids, teeth, and glasses. I encourage you to consider the public option to put that on the table and to work with that. These programs work.
Thank you for that statement, and you mentioned the word TRICARE, so you told me that your husband's a veteran, and I understand that, too. That's something, that's another program that works, and I appreciate that. Kathy, where are you?
I'm right here.
There you are. Sorry.
Okay, next up, we have John from Macy.
Hey, John.
Thank you
for
calling.
Thank you. I'm interested in your
be both helpful to achieving the president's principles and that you would be willing to support.
Well, I hope I'm. You asked me, did I understand you say what Republican proposals?
Yes, the president said he wanted to include Republican ideas.
What?
And that was
really. Yes, John, I actually don't know of any. But I think that this system will work, and that when we get the debate, when the three bills get put together, and at some point, if they've got some good ideas, they'll surely come out in some form of amendment or some proposal. But so far, I haven't, and I have asked. But I think that we'll probably hear it at some point, and there's many, many steps yet to go, so perhaps they will. And of course, H.R. 3200, that some refer to it as the President's Plan, this was a working document, knowing full well it's got to go in the House, got to go through three committees, in the Senate, two, and when they're finished, and they've just finished before we came on the August work period in the Commerce Committee, and so the three of them have got to be pulled together and then put before the rest of us, I'm thinking about some things, but when I see it, if it's not in there, or if it should be, or if it's not, be to see what we can do to offer up amendments as well, but that's the process. So we'll just have to wait and see, but right now, I don't know of any at this moment. Okay, Alexis, wherever you might be. There you are. By the way, just a moment now. Be sure you kind of get up the steps once in a while, too, because I've got some hands up here. But you're doing a good job. Please.
Yes. My name is Mark David, and I'm from Austin, Iowa, and I have cancer. I have been told I have 87 years. My concern is that I'm looking for alternative treatments that are running out of network. And the problem with the out-of-network expense is it costs a lot more money than what my premiums pay. Now, what will your plan do to leave or do away with these out-of-network costs? Because I should be able to go to Kansas City of America for treatment or any other state because I have insurance. And also, one other thing. The money that we pay in Mexico for our brothers and sisters to come across the border, we should stop paying our government money to Mexico to help pay for their costs that they cost us in this country.
Well, first off, our heart goes out to you for your situation with cancer. Everybody has concerns for that, and I've been there in some of that myself, so we appreciate that, as many, many others. The intent of what we're working on, the intent of it is that you and your doctor will decide what you can do under this situation. And a lot of times, because it's totally private, the insurance company's going to decide. And they're there to give health care, but they're there to stay in business and make a profit, and that's okay too. But we feel like that the need has come, the folks like yourself, and I'm sure many of the rest of you, that you and your doctor ought to make that decision. And so that's what we're going to try to do, and we're going to try to stay on that course. Thank you. Kathy.
Yes, sir. I'm next. Yes, Karen from Des Moines.
Put the mic up real close so I can hear. Thank you.
To the lady who just spoke, prayers go out to you. That was a very moving thing for me because my mom, she passed away with cancer as well. She worked 20 years in the same factory before they closed. And when they closed, she was without insurance. Not having insurance, as Jones said, that no one can deny treatment. That's true. But what kind of treatment do you get? There are
talk.
Appreciate you sharing your story, and there has been some terrible misinformation passed out that euthanasia and stuff like that's just simply not true. And what a disservice to these people. I know quite a bit since we've been digging into this about some of the places around the country and across the world that are doing some pretty good work. Mayo Clinic is one that comes to mind. And they have demonstrated through their practice that if you can spend the time, an individual that's where they've got a terminal ailment, or they just want to make their own decisions, not let somebody else do it, that they would counsel with their doctor and talk it over. The doctor would be paid for it like an office call, but that's their business. That's okay, it seems to me. But it's strictly up to the patient. One, to even have the conversation, or two, if they go and have the conversation and they come up with a plan, they can discard it the next hour, the next day, the next whenever. I mean, it's strictly up to them. And it's a lot of peace of mind for a lot of people, and it's also a big cost savings. In this case, I don't think cost saving is the major factor. The peace of mind and the ability for we as human beings to be able to make those kind of decisions with counsel. And that it's elective and it's voluntary. It's up to the individual. And I can't imagine anybody would think that wasn't a good thing to do. Alexis, please.
We've got Jill from Brian.
Thank you so much for being here today. It's been a privilege speaking for Nurse McDonald. We appreciate your service. I am a licensed massage therapist, and massage therapy is a preventative type of healthcare. I just looked at HR3200 yesterday online and see that preventative type things are things that are covered, proposed to be covered. However, I'm also of the opinion that I don't think that government's involvement should be in healthcare. And I mean, what you say to a person that thinks the best solution is for the government to give us back our tax dollars to let Americans choose what we want for healthcare.
I appreciate your concern. It seems to me like after talking and looking now for not just the last few weeks, but the last several months, last several years, that if we stay on this course we're on, status quo, we're going to be in very, very more serious trouble than we are now. So it seems appropriate to me that if you see that happening and you can chart it and see it's happening, why don't you try to do something about it? And that's what we're trying to do. And I already knew this, but when an insurance agent in a small community came up to me and said, what is it that folks don't get when it's going up 15% to 20% every time they come in to renew, that they can't afford it? And so they're taking larger deductibles and bigger co-payments, or actually when it comes down to choosing between having the insurance or the coverage or buying food for the family or paying the rent or whatever, the health care goes. And because they can go to the emergency room. And then everybody else in the country has to pick it up by, the statistics says, adds about 8% to the average policy. So I think it's appropriate for us to study this and work at it and see what we can do, and that's ongoing. and I think it's overdue. It needs to be done. I'm sorry, Kathy, I didn't hear you.
We have George from Des Moines.
George.
Today, sir, I'm George Lederhauser, a practicing physician here in Des Moines. I'll give you a Republican idea that's come out. It's called litigation and tort reform.
First off, doctor, thank you for choosing the profession that you've chosen. If it wasn't for folks like you, I wouldn't be here today. Thank you. And second, as far as I know from this bill regarding tort reform, there's nothing in it. So the answer to that is no. Now, on the other part, to do with prevention and education and so on, there's lots in there, and it needs to be. And I'm going to be pushing hard for that. I got in and out of the state fair a little bit. Didn't have to go to the state fair this year. I hope some of you did. Well, if you stood and could get little people watching, there's a lot of folks out there that ought to be trying to be doing something for their health. And it wasn't too many years ago and I could point that finger at me. So I figure, okay. But, you know, you're right, and this is a big concern for everybody that I talk to in the committees, the Congress, people in the healthcare business like yourself, that we can do better, and we must do better. And I could just share a little nice story with you up in Grundy Center near Waterloo, Cedar Falls. The public school up there has got a healthcare program going, starting with the little children. That it just blows you away. I mean, went up there, we had the new Secretary of Education out there to see this, and I won't take time today out of your time here this hour we got together, but we can do better, and it's being proven right there, and starting with the little children, and they're into it, and they understand, and you know what? I watched the whole period go through, and I saw one little guy that was probably maybe 10 pounds overweight, but they were trim, and they were excited, and they were keeping their records, and they were doing electronic devices and so on to keep track of it. They're going through the obstacle course, their program to get their heart rate up and see and then they knew how it made them feel, and they were into it. The University of Northern Iowa, their teachers program had student teachers down there working with them so they can take that information and take it to the field. And I, as soon as I get caught up on some of this, I'm going to be checking with the Secretary of Education. I said, what do you think about that, and what are we going to do about it? Because we can do better. Thank you very much.
Congressman, one of the concerns that my organization has, which is the Alliance for Retired Americans, is that when we look at the statistics, we see that within the next 15 years, older Iowans are going to be approximately 30% of our population. When I think about healthcare and older Iowans, I think about what happened to my own family, in which we were not able to keep my mother at home to care for her. And the day we had to put her in a nursing home, she died because her dignity was, I never want to go to a nursing home. I felt that I had betrayed her in a sense, but I also wished that something had been believe that older people who are ill, who have the opportunity to stay at home and be cared for, do live a better quality of life in their older years, and they live longer because they're happier. I wonder if there's anything that you are aware of that addresses the issue of long-term care and making provisions in health reform for some kind of affordable long-term care. I am aware that, in a sense, the CLASS Act is addressing that issue. I wondered if, in the House, you're aware of anything that would deal with that, or if you would actually support that were it to be a part of the final act.
Thank you for the question. Well, first off, your last point, yes. Because I have gone on home health care visits with people. In fact, Jack, when we were in the legislature together, I'd go out and spend the day with folks like that. By the way, doctor, I've spent some time with doctor for the day. I've done that a few times, and I'm going to encourage my colleagues, do that and see what you really have to go through in the process. The home health care, and I'll bet you'll confirm this as well, is something that works. And people want it. And but I'm not going to ask for a show of hands how many of you wants to go to a nursing home, but I bet there's none. But I don't think so. But yet, thank heavens they're there when they're needed. But I'm not knocking them at all. But I think your statement about the sensibleness of trying to keep people in their home is very, very valid. And we'll work very hard on it. We'll continue to do so. And I think some of the things we've talked about today, education and prevention and better management and electronic use of the record keeping, one thing that really got to me when I spent the time with the doctor today was that it was one of those busy days, I guess, and all the records they had to keep. But he was doing pretty good until it had an interruption of an emergency. And he got jerked off from an emergency. Somebody came in and was in a car wreck. And I stayed right with him as much as I could. And when he finally got that back, he had to stop back and think, now what was I doing? And it's not fair. We can do that better. And I think that we have enough pilot projects going on and so on that it will not only make it more accurate and take some of the burden off of you, but it also save a lot of money. So that's my yes. I think you've got a very, very good point, and thank you for making it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor, and thank you also for your life work, 30 years. By the way, you look pretty healthy, so you must be doing a few things right for yourself. Thank you for doing that. You're a good example, and appreciate it. You know, as we dug into this, and I know something about what you do at Broadlands. Broadlands is a very special place. It really is. Thank you for serving there. But, you know, when we dug into this, I think for the first time, at least that I've run into this in these several years, the hospitals, the doctors, the healthcare providers across the spectrum saying, we got to do something about this and want to work together. And now we get into it, in some cases we get a little nervous, you know, because, well, how's it going to play out? That's natural. And I'm so appreciative that the statement you just made is indicative of what a lot of others have said, whether it's the hospital administrators or the doctors or nurses. And a lot of places out in rural areas where the nurse practitioners are doing a wonderful job, and I appreciate you making a comment for that. I know several cases where that's going on. As you know, they're under the supervision of a doctor like the one you just heard speak, but they're doing a good job. And people feel attention without having to drive, you know, 80 or 40 or a lot of miles to get to care facility. So this is good things going on. To answer your question, will I support that? Yes. First comment was about the rapidity. I think we've known we've got a problem for quite a while. I think you heard one of the physicians just make a point here just a few minutes ago. We've known we've had a problem. Now, there's kind of three categories of people, and I'm not saying any of you are any one of them. There's folks that are pretty well-to-do, and they got health care, and they're going to have it because they can afford it, and that's fine. That's okay. Then there's those out here that I find out that's got health care with their company or this, that, and the other, and it keeps going up. The provisions get less and less, and they're scared to death they're going to lose it. And then there's that those several million that don't have it at all, and as we've been described, they rely on going to the emergency room. That's out there. And I hope you were here. I don't know if you were or not. You might have been, but the agent that came up to me, he didn't tell me something I didn't already know, but he sure drove the point home. So what is it that folks don't understand that this country, there's so many out there, particularly in this large spectrum of middle class, they cannot afford to have their insurance costs going up 15 or 20% every time they go to renew their policy. They just can't do it. And so the statement is, so why don't you try to do something about it? And that's what we're trying to do. And I think there's my own personal testimony, and you've heard one from one of the veterans over here that you know, it's worked. It's worked for us, and I've been around quite a little while, and hope to be around longer. And I'm not afraid of it, and I'm certainly not afraid to get out there under daylight and put sunlight on it and see if we can't work out something that will work better, and that's what it's all about, it seems to me. Kathy.
Good afternoon, President. Thank you very much for your service to our state and for your commitment to public option. I have two questions.
country that we are today because that necessity was fulfilled. We can and need to do it again with healthcare reform and making a big change. My first question is, what will you do to persuade fellow politicians who are on the fence to vote for the plan with public option? And without the public option, should that be passed, not be passed, what is the alternative reform that Congress would propose? And how would insurance companies be held accountable to reform, including things such as eliminating pre-existing conditions and reducing administrative costs?
Well, I think to answer your question is that to do the insurance companies to deal with that situation, we've got to have this option. Now, I got to see what it is, this final writing, you know, but I feel very strongly about this Medicare reimbursement piece. And if it's not, right now we've got the language that says that we can take an approach on that. But if we base the option on Medicare reimbursement as it hits Iowa, not, for example, like maybe it's done in Louisiana, we're in a world of hurt. So we got to watch out very closely. But I think we need this. It's got to be right, and we're working very hard on it. And what am I doing with some of my colleagues? I've spent hours and hours and hours, and I'm going to continue to do it. And because it seems to me like we're at a point when you look at not only the impact on people's lives, their families, and some of the stories you've heard here today, and I hear it constantly. I can't go to the fair and just kind of go check on the big steer or anything else without talking to people about it, and that's their right. I respect that. But I can hardly move around because people are worried about what's going to happen. And they say, you know, I hear story after story after story after story after story. And when we had the ambassadors here the other day, and some of the conversations I had with them, and they appreciate it. Like I said, well, you know, we're not particularly trying to address this after what you do in your country. If it's working for you, and in every case they said it was, I said, well, we're trying to work at something that's best for Americans. That we can see it in transparency and put it out there in daylight and spend the time. And we're not really doing it all that rapid. We slowed down a little bit because to get through this August period. But this has been going on for a long, long time. And we heard a testimony here, somebody that works at our public facility, that it's long overdue. And it didn't just happen yesterday. But I still think we got to go at a pace where we can make it happen and read the fine print. And there's a lot to read. And I've been working on that now since July the 14th. And now we've got to bring those three bills together and then go through. Katie and I will spend hours and hours and hours of picking through that to make sure we can figure out the differences and so on. And we'll do that because that's our responsibility to do it. But I think that just to answer your question, I've been working on it. I'm going to keep working on it. But it's got to, as they say down on the farm, it's got to hold water. We've got to make sure that that's what we need for it to do, and that yet that's got to be resolved. I'm not just going after a blank piece of paper. I want something that will do it, and I think we can. I really hope that we can. I think we can. There's always this guy hangs around sometimes, you know. Jack, you know about that. I just recognized a former legislative friend there. Jack, good to see you. It's been a while. This guy walks around and says, one more question. Well, we'll take more than one, but I saw you, so you do. Who had the last one? I'm lost track. You're up next. Alexis.
Yeah, can you put them on?
Well, Congressman, first of all,
you got to hold this up right for your.
It's more than just health care. It's usurping the constitutional rights. Thank you.
Well, I just realized who you're sitting by right there, and this gentleman knows something about when you write a new law, it pertains to other laws, you got to make reference to it, because he got in on several of those. So good to see you, Norm. I think we're within the Constitution myself. I will submit to you that none of you here are more. Let's be respectful. I submit to you that there's nobody here that respects that Constitution more than I have, and you as well, many of you. And when you're willing to put your life on the line for it, well, that pretty well demonstrates it. A lot of you have, as well as I. So I hear what you're saying. I'm going to make note of that, and we'll enter that into the discussion. But we don't have the final version of what we're going to have when we bring the three together, and we really have to do that for the next step. Well, I guess if it has an effect on another law that's on the books, you got to make reference to it, and that's one way to do it. But maybe we can do it better. Where you at? Kathy.
Going on in the healthcare industry. I'll trust my government. insurance company.
Well, I appreciate the concerns that you have, and you farmers, thank you for producing food. You know, the population of this world is growing between 85 and 90 billion a year. You know, we got other challenges. We get past this one. This one's big, but we got another one just around the corner, and it's just coming down the track pretty fast. I believe it's Alexis next, and then I think we'll have Kathy for one last question, and that'll be it. But Alexis, please.
We've got B from the morning.
A little closer, yeah, there.
We're letting these people who you represent come and voice our opinions and listen to what we have as concerns. Sir, I'm a registered nurse, and the reason I became a nurse was to use my medical knowledge so that I could care for patients and assist them through their medical issues and give them excellent care. Have you read the complete healthcare plan? That is my first question to you. And I'm going to go on before you answer that. Sir, I've read 800 pages of that plan. And my concern as you sit here today is the small businesses, which are the backbone of this country. And in section 113, pages 21 through 22, the healthcare plan mandates that the government will audit the books of all employers that insure their employees. This doesn't seem fair. In section 122, pages 29, lines 4 through 16, it clearly states in words, it truly does, that the government will ration health care. I don't understand why it's having a bill. In section 142, page 42, it says that a government health commissioner will choose health care benefits for everyone, and that takes away from the doctor-patient relationship. In section 152, it says that health care will be provided to all non-U.S. citizens. And further says in section 59E that any non-resident alien is exempt from individual taxes, and that citizens, we the people, are going to pay for that care. It further goes on to say in section 1501, pages 659 through 670, that doctors in the medical residency, the government will tell you where you can take your residency education and where you will live.
Are you going to read all the, wait a minute. Are you going to read all those pages?
No.
Okay.
The problem that I have is that, you know, each person in this room today has issues with health care. Granted, that's, you know, something that's very true. But I discovered as I read the plan that it really has not a lot to do with health people, but it has a lot to do with government control of our lives. And my second question
that I have, which I think everybody in this room deserves an answer to. Why can't we have the same health care that you have?
First off, our HR 3200 does not cover unauthorized anybody but authorized citizens. Simple as that. Second, the whole idea behind this HR 3200, which is the working document of the draft, is to pattern it after the same kind of insurance that all federal employees, including me, got. That's the idea. Listen, I've been on this for a long, long time, and don't be so loud. Yes, of course. Oh, I'm already on it. So anyway, I would say this. I'm trying to remember all the questions you had because you went through several pages there. Oh, the idea to the ration. No, we're not going to have ration, and we'll work very hard to make sure that doesn't happen. Okay, Kathy, where are you? Kathy?
Okay, up next we have Jamie from West Des Moines. Thank you, Tom.
First off, I thought I made it clear, but I'll try again. The whole intent for me, and I think for all of us that I've talked to as we've talked about going through this HR 3200 and trying to make the improvements to it and take the steps, is between you, the patient, and you, the doctor. That's where it needs to be. And I feel very strongly about that, not between you and the insurance company, you and the doctor. So I thank you for your service, both for whatever you did as a government employee and as well as a veteran. I appreciate it very much. We're going to continue to work on this the best we can to make improvements and be available and pass this information along and see if we can't work this out to where we can take care of a lot more people are getting taken care of right now. I think we can. I appreciate you coming this afternoon and spending this time with me. Please thank you welcome. And thank you very much. Thank you.